So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Revolution.
One thing mankind is not is ready to face you in a street fight at the Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden. But I think the fans deserve a substitute in that match. I think you know the guy. His name is Cactus Jack.
Cactus Jack is back. Drastic time. Call for drastic measures. Triple H forced Mick Foley to metamorphosize into Cactus Jack.
This guy's psychotic. He's homicidal.
What I am is one bad son of a bitch.
Cactus Jack is as hardcore as anybody could ever be.
Mick Foley, your blood will stain New York City. I promise you that.
So at the Royal Rumble, you're going to make me bleed. It will not be the first time, and it sure as hell will not be the last.
And for a man that has wrestled on nails in barbed wire, this will be a day at Central Park.
Do you think Triple H knows what the hell he's gotten himself into for the Royal Rumble?
You look into my eyes and realize I'm going to tear you apart in New York City.
It's up to you, New York, New York.
Yeah. After a fantastic edition of Live Audio Wrestling with Dan the Moth Lebransky and Wei Ting, I just wanted to congratulate you, Wei, on a job well done. And here you are, still going for another hour or so here with me on Review Away.
I know.
Amicable. Admirable was actually the word.
Thank you, Tom.
Don't want to mix up things.
You know, I had a lot of fun doing this vlog, and especially with Dan the Moth Lebransky. And as you heard, I think perhaps the greatest live audio wrestling of all time.
I would agree, Wei. I would agree. And
it's nice of you to join us so quickly.
Well, I won't be lying.
You just got back.
I just got back from my vacation.
Just in Jamaica.
It was great. It was great. I left yesterday morning, and it was just a great day.
What was the highlight of your trip?
The highlight would definitely have been the weather and the food.
Well,
it was great. You know, in fact, I'm just going to chill out for most of I'm going to go back, actually, right after
tonight's
review. I'm going to fly back.
Okay.
Stay for the week.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yes. Well, it's at least we have you for this hour.
I wanted to come back for a Review Away. I didn't have enough incentive to come back for Raw and Impact this week.
No.
But for the Royal Rumble 2000, Wei, come on. That's worth the
your
flyer
planes,
miles.
Your
right
plane's
there.
Waiting for you.
It is, so we better get into this. The 2000 Royal Rumble, Wei, from New York City and Madison Square Garden. Now, every couple of shows, I always like to get your barometer on where you were in wrestling at this point. I mean, were you an avid watcher at this point in time? Because you, unlike most people, kind of weren't following during the big boom period.
No, actually, I think the period that I actually stopped following it was around maybe early 97 until about late 99, I think. And so for this actual event,
what did you do?
I was just looking at my Raw notes, and I thought that I had the wrong notes.
Too many shows, Wei.
I wasn't watching. I didn't watch all the pay-per-views. I never paid for pay-per-views back then, so I did not see this pay-per-view yet. But I did see a lot of these matches before.
I did watch this pay-per-view at home with my younger brother.
You have a younger brother?
Yes, I have a younger brother. You know that.
I thought he was your older brother for
some
reason.
No, it wasn't an older brother. Younger brother. I was the oldest.
Okay.
Him and I were watching this, and very, very awkward segment to watch with anybody, much less your own brother.
When did you watch? Like, you mean back then?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant recently.
No. I mean, back, I would have been, at this point in time, I think 15 years old, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was younger than me, and I felt very irresponsible for allowing my brother to watch this. He was like 2 years younger than me.
Mm. And so your brother was 13.
Yes. So let's get into it, Wei. I think everyone knows what that was.
Mm-hmm. And it was your idea? Your brother was not the wrestling fan?
No, my brother was just as big a wrestling fan as me. So he wanted to watch it just
So you're not the one to blame. It's your parents that are to blame.
Let's just get into the review, boy. We start off with a tremendous video building up the Triple H Cactus Jack match. Mm-hmm. They had shots from the IWA death match in Japan mm-hmm. with Cactus Jack.
We should review those.
Yeah, those would be great to review.
Oh, my God.
A friend of mine once ordered the King of the Deathmatch show off like a video site like years and years ago, and I remember him. At the time, I was like, you're gonna get a whole show where it's just guys killing one another. He's like, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And me, I ordered like this. We both found this site, and we both were gonna order some tapes. I got like the Super Juniors tournament, and he got the like the King of the Deathmatch, and it was just contrasting styles, I guess, but. It would be fun to review.
It would
that.
Be fun, especially the ICP commentary versions.
Oh yeah, that's right. Where they're all the guys have been pissed because of the royalties that they have not received from ICP.
Yes.
So I thought this was a pretty good video building
Great.
Up the main event for the street fight with Hunter and Cactus Jack. Mm-hmm. Hunter, for those of you, he had won the title the previous September. Then he had dropped it. And he had just won it back a few weeks before this event. And
this
is
his third title reign, actually.
Was it his third?
Yeah.
And it was not exactly clicking at this point for him. I mean, he was... who would be a good description?
The Miz.
To be honest, I think The Miz is clicking a lot more than Hunter when he first got the title, to be honest. But he was right at that cusp where it was... He was somewhat being pushed down everyone's throat, and the people were not exactly taking him as your top heel champion. That's probably the best way to put it. And then he was put in this feud with Cactus Jack, who we've reviewed shows involving him in late 99 where his body was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought he was he himself was planning to retire a few months earlier and then got this extended run. Lots of taxi cab horns and sound effects were part of the theme of this pay-per-view way.
This is New York.
They were really pushing, New York and a street fight, and people honk horns in streets where a fight would occur. Your announcers are Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And then Kurt Angle comes out for his match with a surprise opponent. And he cuts a promo and says that in a building this famous, it deserves to have a champion perform in it. And if we wait for Patrick Ewing and the Knicks to win a title, they would wait forever. And he decides to be their champion in New York. What?
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right. He looks so slim here. Very tiny.
He, if you look at 2000 and 2010, my God, is this man aged. Like an incredible degree.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a long time.
There are huge, huge chance of We Want Taz. To the point that if it had been anybody else that came out, man, would they have shit on him.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was Taz.
It was.
And it comes right as Angle is reminding everyone to remember his three eyes and give it his all. Taz comes out with his theme music. He's got the towel on his head.
Yeah.
And the people are just going insane for this guy.
Honestly, I gotta say, this was perhaps Taz's peak of his WWE
100% his
run.
Peak. Absolutely. I can't think of anything that comes close to this.
I've never heard this man get so much heat since.
He comes in and right away hits a back body drop and they go to fight on the floor and we see a belly to belly suplex by Angle to Taz. Taz then comes back with an overhead suplex and he's just delivering suplex after suplex to Angle.
Yeah.
Really getting that part across, which I don't think we would ever see after this night.
Mm-mm.
Taz destroys Angle with three consecutive suplexes. Then he applies the Taz mission, and the official lifts up Angle's arm three times, which I find very anticlimactic in the era of taps, that if you apply a submission so quickly and then you gotta raise his hands, it's a completely different time period, 11 years ago, but
what do you mean?
I just think it's more, you get a bigger pop now when a guy taps.
Yeah.
Like right away to a submission, rather than just imagine
they wanted to do the angle with the angle passing.
Well, yes, and I don't think they were even doing tapping at this point in WWF.
Didn't Shamrock start it?
Oh, we've had this debate, haven't we?
Yeah.
That's right, they did do it with Shamrock.
Mm-hmm.
So, still very new though. It wasn't, I think, as established for submissions as it would later become, even in the next year.
But Taz's mission was applied, and neither Ross nor Lawler knew what to call it. and the EMTs immediately arrived. I mean, like, they were just waiting in the back, and they immediately arrived to tend to Kurt Angle, who is now passed out. And the announcers questioned whether or not this choke was legal or illegal.
You see, they state it was more of a choke than a sleeper hold.
Yeah, but a sleeper hold?
Why do you call it a sleeper hold? It's because you're choking the oxygen out of the guy, mm-hmm. and he goes unconscious.
Well, a sleeper hold should be the arteries. It's like a rear naked choke.
Yes, a choke.
Yeah, not a wind choke, though. Isn't that what they're
arguing? No, a rear naked choke, you're going right on the
not the windpipe. It's supposed to be the arteries.
I think it's a combination.
Yeah, but I think usually it's meant to be a blood choke, not a wind choke.
Okay. So this was the controversy that was left that they would come to. Then we go to a very young Michael Cole backstage with the Hardys and Terry.
Yeah.
And...
oh, my God.
Let's hear some of this promo, everybody.
Michael, we are going to go out there and tear the roof off of Madison Square Garden.
Terry, no! You think we're going to let you go out there tonight? Do you realize how violent this is going to be? No. Everyone knows the Dudleys are extreme. Everyone knows the Dudleys are the master of putting people through tables. We weren't even supposed to be in the WWF, but we are. And tonight, we're going to put the Dudleys through tables, or we're going to die trying.
Terry, no! This was one of the first promos the Hardys ever cut.
Then he holds his hands up to his face.
No! No! No!
Oh, my God. If ever there was a case for these two men never talking, this was it.
Well, okay, and he's much better now, way better now in TNA, doing his promos.
Oh, for sure. Compared to this way,
you may dislike him. Oh, my God. Jeff Hardy is much better now.
But his promo at the Tokyo Dome was not.
Oh, really?
Did you hear about this?
No, I did not.
He did a promo before his match with Tetsuya Naito, where he said, "Get ready, Tokyo Dome, because you're about to see the greatest match in Tokyo Dome history."
Really? Wow. Great.
Brilliant, Jeff.
Great wording.
Spoiler alert, he didn't. So they show a highlight here of the Hardys being powerbombed through tables on Raw, and then Matt Hardy on SmackDown delivering a guillotine leg drop off the ramp onto the Dudleys, onto tables.
Mm-hmm.
This was an extremely intense angle for the setup for this pay-per-view. Yeah. A guillotine leg drop off the SmackDown ramp.
Yeah, that was something they did every week.
That was crazy. Then we get a Taz. Did you watch the version where it had like the home video inserts?
Yep.
We get a promo from Taz where he basically says he's going to go through the whole company.
Mm-hmm.
This was a lie.
Yeah, he did not.
So next up, it's the first ever tag team tables match with the Dudley Boys against the Hardys. Dudley's cut a promo on New York fans and say that John Rocker is their new friend and he should be the mayor of New York, and tells the audience to bend their heads between their legs and kiss their own asses.
Mm,
I had to sit back and actually visualize what they were instructing the fans
to do. I've seen
that.
There's a photo of it online.
Oh, okay.
There's a guy who stuck his head up his own ass.
Okay.
Yes.
So that might forget, do you remember John Rocker?
No, I never watched baseball around that time either. I stopped watching when the Jays started to suck.
He was a closing pitcher.
Oh yeah,
the Atlanta Braves. Who was did this interview with someone, and he thought it was off the record, and the reporter didn't, and he said some very, I guess, homophobic and racial slurs. And that's kind of what he's known for.
I thought they went a bit far when D-Von suggested that John Rocker should be New York's mayor. Come on. That's a little ridiculous.
This is a ridiculous era, Way. They had to go extreme. Did you notice the referee in this match?
Was it Jimmy Carderas?
No, it was Teddy Long.
Oh, okay.
He's now general manager of SmackDown.
All right.
That guy's quietly been with that company like forever.
He has.
It's like well over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Bubba brings in the first table in the match.
How much do referees make?
I have no clue. Should ask Jimmy Corderas.
Yeah. How much do you make? How much do...
they're doing more than just reffing. They're also like part of the ring crew and doing other jobs.
Yeah. I was going to ask how much they weigh.
How much does this guy weigh?
Oh, man. On the Facebook group, when you and I were hosting the lawn that week, these guys are just on the group asking how much everybody weighs.
Oh, really? I didn't even see that. Sorry.
This is funny.
I was busy watching Aladdin. We get Bubba Ray bringing the first table into the match. There's a high back body drop to Jeff, but Matt moves the table.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get a disgusting, unprotected chair shot by Bubba to Jeff. That was number one.
Wait, was that Bubba to Jeff? Okay, and then Bubba takes one himself.
There are a lot.
There are
in
tons.
This match.
I remember just watching this match that I've seen Bubba Ray Dudley take a lot of these unprotected chair shots, perhaps more than most people, aside from maybe Mick Foley or some other people. But Bubba Ray Dudley himself, he's taken a lot of these.
Well, we'll do a count in this match,
right?
Because I wrote all of them down.
Okay.
We see the first one. Then Jeff scales the barricade, and he's running across, but runs into a table that Bubba puts up, who apparently recovered from this chair shot immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that I find the most confusing, is that why would you do such a big spot if it's just a transition rest spot?
Well, to them back then,
not even sold.
In that era, you know, thinking about ECW and everything, that was not a big spot. A chair shot to the head was just like a punch. Really, especially in this match.
So what would a punch mean?
I don't know, a flick?
Yeah, I guess. Then Matt brings a ladder into the ring, and they attack the Dudleys with it. Bubba then hits a second chair shot, this time to the... Bubba takes the chair shot from Matt Hardy, and Ross says that will lead to a hell of a headache on Monday morning. I agree. Bubba's put through the table first as Matt goes for a leg drop off the ladder. This looked terribly painful, because they were going to put Bubba through a table at the same time with Hardy hitting... With Matt hitting a leg drop, mm-hmm. and Jeff hitting a splash to the floor, and Jeff hit first, so Matt just took this giant bump onto his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, would that have hurt?
Yeah, it would have. It would.
Right onto the floor. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no padding where he hit.
It looked great, though. You had, you know, all you could see was Matt climbing off that ladder and Matt jumping, and then Jeff appeared from off camera and just appeared to dive onto Bubba at the same time, so it looked great.
Matt then hits a chair shot to the head of D-Von right after this spot. So that's number three. Then D-Von's set up on a table, and Matt misses another leg drop off the top rope going through a table. Then instantly, Jeff runs from off camera mm-hmm. and misses a suicide dive through the ropes and goes through another table.
Yeah.
But they explain that it must be an offensive maneuver by the Dudleys putting the Hardys through the tables.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know this match is almost like sacred in some fans' mm-hmm. memories,
mm-hmm.
but if it wasn't for Jim Ross, this match was extremely confusing to figure out the rules of.
Yeah.
Because technically Bubba was eliminated here.
He was.
Because he had gone through a table.
Yeah, but he could still wrestle.
So the announcers were awesome here.
Yes, absolutely. But again, Jeff Hardy just seems to fly in from all angles for these spots.
This was like the craziest period.
Yeah.
Matt then takes... This was the worst chair shot of the entire match. Bubba just comes up from behind Matt. Matt has no idea this is even coming. And he... Matt's like on all fours, and Bubba just destroys him in the back of the head with this steel chair. That's the absolute worst part of your head to be hit.
Yeah.
And Matt didn't even know it was coming. This was just horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care how many people are going to just joke about this. It's, oh my God.
And I'm sure they all realize that now, too, but back then, this was just the norm, so you can't really fault these guys too much.
It was, I give all the credit to these four who just killed themselves in this match.
But oh, yeah.
It's just very, very difficult to watch at times.
And I don't think we'll see anything like this anymore today.
We see a Bubba Bomb to Matt off of the second rope through the tables, which are
stacked
on top of the two sets of steel steps.
So Matt is now eliminated.
Yeah, Matt's eliminated. And the margin for error of this was so tiny, where he would land on the mat instead of like hitting part of his probably already injured tailbone on these metal steps.
Yeah.
I mean, they took so many risks in this match. I could not believe it. But Matt appeared to be okay after this, incredibly. Then we move over to the entranceway. Matt takes another chair shot to the head. Matt was just, I can't imagine what this guy must have felt like after this, between those two leg drops off ladders mm-hmm. to the floor, multiple chair shots to the head, and the other table spots he took in this. I think he took the worst of this, maybe along with Bubba. Then they set up two tables on top of each other by this entrance way that you'll be familiar with if you've ever seen a Madison Square Garden show, of these little, I guess...
The exit way, actually.
Yeah, the exit ways.
The camera, the hard camera side.
So they fight at the entrance way.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff then makes a comeback to save Matt and another nasty chair shot to Devon's head. Then Bubba stops him and hits Jeff with a chair shot to the head. Bubba and Jeff then fight on top of the entranceway. Jeff hits a low blow, then two chair shots to the head of Bubba. That would be four for Bubba in this match. And then he does the nasty plunge off of the entranceway, back first, through the stacked tables.
Uh-huh.
Then there is one remaining table
that
Devon is then put on by Matt. And Jeff does a swanton dive off the entranceway through the table.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe this match. It was just every stunt under the sun.
Yes. Yes.
I'm actually surprised that you put this on a show where you also have a street fight. It's like, how do you follow this?
Yeah. Well, they kept it spaced far enough.
Yeah, they did. And again, these four worked their asses off in this match. Like, if you are a fan of these stunt shows, this was your match.
Yes. And you can definitely tell both of these teams knew that this was what they had going for them, this type of style, they along with Edge and Christian. And so they really did deliver. This was just one of many of the matches that these guys all had that featured a lot of creative spots, and they were really just nonstop spot fest. But in a lot of people's minds, they are legendary in their existence.
So I think this type of match, it set a terrible precedent for the era, but this was what was being presented at the time, and it did wonders for both teams.
Absolutely. It made their careers, let's be honest.
It really did. And that's, you know, for better or worse. And the punishment these guys took in this match was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to an EMT backstage with a flashlight in Angle's eyes, which was an odd transition after the match we just saw. And he's concerned.
Tom Pritchard doing these interviews.
Yes, producing Dr. Tom Pritchard, who you can see on Ultimate Classic Wrestling next week in a steel cage match with Jerry the King Lawler.
Mm-hmm.
8 o'clock Eastern on the Fight Network.
Mondays.
Angle is not worried at all about his health. He just wants to know if he lost the match or not. And they say that he was choked out. And he says, well, that's not a loss. I'm still undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the angle that would continue with Kurt.
You know, it certainly puts the move over. It certainly puts the Taz mission over as a devastating maneuver. But I don't know if this was the right angle to build on Taz's great momentum coming in as this badass. I mean, here you have this guy who has an incredible following. Now
to be honest, though,
he's being discussed as somebody who's cheating to win.
I don't think they ever had huge plans for Taz. I think he was always designed for the role fell into. I completely agree with you in terms of how they...
Then why bring him in at all? Just so ECW couldn't have him?
Just another guy? Sure.
Okay.
You know. He got a tremendous reaction. I mean, he got by on his reactions during his early part.
Yeah.
And then it was just...
Well, they let him have a win over Angle.
By the next pay-per-view, he had a singles match with the Big Boss Man. So that should tell you where he was headed.
Okay.
Then, up next way, it's the Miss Rumble 2000 swimsuit competition.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get to watch this. Because I watched the show while at work, and I knew what was coming, and I did not want to watch this with my colleagues around me.
So you're going to make me describe this?
Yes, I am. What happened, John?
This is... In the history of wrestling, everybody, this was probably the one segment that I've never been more embarrassed about a wrestling segment in my life than this.
Wow, really? Ever?
Ever. I've watched people picking their nose. I have watched
the next
kiss my ass segments.
Katie Vick.
This was the worst, I thought. I thought this was the worst. All We've right. got our judges, everybody. Sergeant Slaughter, Tony Garea, Fabulous Moolah, Luscious Johnny V was here as a judge. And then he didn't even get an entrance, but they announced Andy Richter was here from the Conan O'Brien show.
Hmm.
And we also had Freddie Blassie out.
But he had left the Conan O'Brien show by that point, had he not?
Or was he still there? No. This was 2000. I think he was still there. Okay. And our MC is Jerry the King Lawler. And they bring out our contestants, Ivory, Terry, Jacqueline, BB, who was...
Barbara Bush.
Luna, the cat, who had this knockoff Sable theme music with, like, the whip at the front of her music. And the gimmick here is that Ivory doesn't want to be a part of this, yet she still wears a G-string. And I found this a little creepy if she was forced to wear this against her will. Terry...
Well, they all are. Honestly, they are.
I guess. But the other women, they're happy to parade around half-naked, but Ivory was not. Terry wore this flesh-colored bathing suit, and Jim Ross doing play-by-play for this? Awesome. Luna also doesn't want to be in this, and tells Lawler that she won't take her robe on for any of these people. So we had two women doing the same gimmick. They built up to Miss Kitty, who some of you might remember at the previous pay-per-view, took her top off on a pay-per-view, which got a lot of controversy at the time, because if it was planned... And you're allowing children into this event, and you're presenting them with, like, live nudity. So she's wearing a bubble wrap bikini. And then the music hits, and Mae Young is the final entrant, who runs in, and she takes her robe off. Then she takes her top off, and the crowd is just in horror. The sound of the crowd here, and the crowd shots. Now, thankfully, on this video, they censored it. I remember hearing around this time that she wasn't actually topless to the live crowd. In fact, she had some apparatus on that was similar to what they used in There's Something About Mary with the old lady.
On the live broadcast, didn't they show everything?
I don't know, to be honest. When I was watching, I can't remember this when I was a kid, because I think I left the room, to be honest. I was so...
Mae Young nude.
Okay.
That's what I'm Googling.
Okay, right. You've... Do some research there. That's what I recall at the time.
Ugh,
so
gross.
Mae Young is just running around with her bathing suit half off. Mark Henry runs down to cover her up, and the judges give the unanimous decision to Mae Young. So apparently these judges were about as competent as the current MMA judges we routinely get at various MMA events. Probably the same ones who scored the Nam Fan fight.
Yes, Sergeant Slaughter. Andy Richter was there.
What, you thought I lied to you?
No. I meant they did show him.
Yeah, I said they didn't give him an entrance.
I see, but he was just
showing at ringside.
Okay.
He was probably just so embarrassed to be here at this point.
Yeah, this is embarrassing. Oh, God.
So this was just an atrocious segment, everybody.
But it's legendary, is it not?
I don't know. Like, at least some of their stupid skits, you can find some redeeming entertainment value to. I never understood the Mae Young humor. I think it was just a way to make your audience as uncomfortable as possible. Prove that we can show you guys anything and you'll still watch us.
Perhaps. But,
you gotta remember, their competition at the time was barely a blip on the radar at this point.
Yeah.
This was just them being as crazy as possible.
And but it got you talking. Didn't it?
It did. So there you go, everyone. The swimsuit competition goes to Mae Young. So then Jim Ross throws to the new WWF New York with our new broadcast colleague, Jonathan Coachman. And we go to Coachman, and there's all these fans attacking him and running in front of the camera. A journalist's dream come true of dealing with idiot fans. Then we go to Chris Jericho and China backstage, who are arguing about who is going to wear the Intercontinental title out. Because both are champion at the time, right?
Yes, they are.
Co-champions.
Co-champions as a result of a double pinfall.
So the result is that the title is stolen away from Hebner, Dave Hebner. And he takes the title, and the match will be to decide who is the undisputed champion.
Jericho, as Dave Hebner is leaving, Jericho says, "Earl, come on! Dave!"
I missed that. Yeah. Another exclusive home video interview with Kurt Angle, stating that he was choked illegally and not pinned, so he is still undefeated. So our next match is a three-way for the Intercontinental title. Chris Jericho, China, and Hardcore Holly. Holly is introduced as weighing in at, quote, allegedly 400 pounds.
You know what? Judging by his appearance, I don't think he would be that far off. This dude looked gigantic.
A Scott Putsky subscriber.
Absolutely.
Ross says that China is more than a marketing slogan and an incredible being, very intelligent and a skilled athlete. Three lies in one sentence by Jim Ross, the usually dependable Jim Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho gets a huge pop for his entrance, despite being a heel at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He says the celebration for his title win will be bigger than his seven-year-old sister's birthday party, and that, and then Lawler then pipes in, it'll probably be at WWF New York.
Huh.
Just a shill.
Lawler also says, I bet Mae Young's dairy farm gives off powdered milk.
Oh, thanks, Way. I'm glad you picked up on the commentary. Jericho goes for the Walls of Jericho early on to Hardcore Holly, but China returns to the match and breaks it up. She gets heavily booed for doing this. The crowd hated China, they loved Jericho, just like that pay-per-view match a few months ago that we reviewed before this, their Survivor Series match. China hits her handspring elbow onto Jericho, and then a DDT for a pin attempt, but Holly makes the save. China hits this shitty-looking drop kick into a chair that Holly is holding on the floor. Looked terrible. We see a weird spot where Jericho and China hit a splash onto Holly and go for the double pin.
It was odd because China lands first, and Jericho actually lands on top of China, but China doesn't sell it, and in fact, they just argue.
And then they go for the double pin, but Holly doesn't kick out. Very bad spot. China then hits a low blow to Jericho and a weak, weak pedigree onto Holly for a near fall. Then Jericho hits a cross body to China, who is on the shoulders of Holly for another near fall. Then we see a top rope superplex by China to Holly, but it's Holly who rolls over to pin her right away for a two count. Then China hits a chair shot to the head of Hardcore Holly and applies the Walls of Jericho, but then Jericho hits a face plant onto China, then the Lion Salt for the win. And all I can say, China dragged this match down significantly.
Yeah. As you'd expect.
She sucked.
Okay, but as you'd expect, though, really, that China wouldn't be good.
Well, it doesn't mean I'm going to alter my expectations just because there's a shitty worker in there.
Well, okay.
Shitty worker equaled a shitty match here.
All right. Well, I got to say, my expectations were a lot worse than what this match turned out to be. And I actually thought this was a decent match up until the finish, which I thought was a bit flat. China's obviously the most limited of the group, but for what she could
do... Was Holly even a babyface at this point? It's like you had three, theoretically, heels in this match. Holly might have been a babyface.
I think Jericho... Wasn't Jericho sort of a
babyface? No, he was still a heel at this point. He was still hitting China with hammers. Which it might be a babyface move for you, but for the rest of the world, it's a heel maneuver.
Well... For what China could do, I thought they made the most out of it.
I disagree. Next up, Michael Cole is with The Rock, who's wearing this goofy-looking jersey.
Oh, the merchandise that they designed for this.
Oh.
And the fact that it was so popular meant that...
Imagine people wearing this.
People in my high school bought this
shit.
Oh,
really?
Like these shitty Rock jerseys.
They used to sell elbow pads for The Rock. Like they would just buy anything, glasses and... Other dumb.
He's got to be so embarrassed now. I mean, like, The Rock's been on GQ. The Rock is, like, this famous Hollywood celebrity. Now there's all this footage out there of him with his name on these shitty made-in-China basketball jerseys.
I don't think he's any more embarrassed than some of the other stuff that's out there. Rock then proceeds to cut a promo saying he's only concerned about two men in the Royal Rumble tonight, Crash Holly and Headbanger Mosh. And if he can get past those two, he might have a shot. And then he cuts a promo on The Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yes.
Tremendous.
This is really good. I thought this was perhaps The Rock at his peak.
Jericho then, with a home video interview, says that it was a physically draining match. I agree. For me too. And says that all the doubts have been erased. And he calls it, in a name that never got over, the Chris Anental title. Fail.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then we go to our tag match. I had no recollection of this match being on this show at all. The New Age Outlaws against the Acolytes for the tag titles, Way. You get a preview video.
Oh,
sorry.
God.
We're surrounded by idiots who are taking our picture here. Yeah. We're doing our job here.
Roy Nelson has just walked by our
studio. We work with Roy Nelson here.
Yes.
Who once tapped out to my guillotine.
Yes.
Anyway, We've got your standard video here promoting this match. Mm-hmm. And all they did, Wei, I know you'll be impressed by this. They just increased the tape speed, including the same shoulder block spot by Farooq showing three times over from different angles.
Oh,
that was
the
build-up for this.
Did they increase the tape speed?
Yeah, it was just speedy moves to make these four clumps look like athletes.
That's a good trick.
So this was the hokiest preview video I've ever seen from the WWF. The intro featured... there was this guy in the front row wearing a sideways yellow baseball hat and a WWF New York hockey jersey. He looked like something right out of like an Offspring video from the late 90s. This match featured Billy Gunn missing one of the acolytes into the turnbuckle, JBL, and then takes the clothesline from hell. Then we see a ref bump on the floor as Gunn is thrown into him. A double powerbomb on Road Dogg, but then X-Pac runs in, takes a Dominator from Farooq, then Gunn is back in the ring, hits the Famouser on Bradshaw for the win. All of this in 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
That's fine. That's great,
It was almost 2 minutes too long. That was fine, as long as it was fucking short.
Nah, it was just your basic TV match. Nothing stood out whatsoever.
Then we get the following promo from Road Dogg, where he spells out every single word.
Coliseum home video exclusive.
You see, it's me, it's that D-O-double-G, and you can't even see that D-A-double-D, because we just got our A-double crooked letter handed to us in MSG, but we beat the Acolytes 1, 2, 3, and as you see, we'll still be the C-H-A-M.
Thanks, Coliseum Video. We didn't need this. So that was over with, thankfully. Unfortunately, we'd see all four later. And that brings us to the WWF title match, everybody. Triple H against Cactus Jack for the WWF title. Another awesome pre-match video.
Yeah, this was done to the tune of O for Tuna by Carl Orff.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought this video told a really great story. Despite some goofy stuff during the build-up, including... this one-week retirement that Mick Foley had to go through where it was a pink slip on a pole match, and then the whole locker room united to get him hired back, which sounds okay, but this was a month away from you doing Foley's actual retirement that I felt, it's just, retirements are like, why bullshit with them? And this very cheesy Have a Bad Day video that Triple H did with Midian as Mankind, trying to find a job outside the WWF.
Mm-hmm. And then the re-debut of Cactus Jack. They attempted to create
this
superhero in Cactus Jack as someone who didn't do the comedy that Mankind did. And he was somebody who was strictly about vicious, hardcore, deathmatch-style wrestling. They kept him, they made him not wrestle until this pay-per-view, and I thought it was
brilliant.
Fantastic.
It was really, really well done. Mm-hmm. For a lot of fans that had maybe just gotten into the boom period watching WWF who had only seen Mankind as a comedy figure, I thought this was really well done. Stephanie comes out with Hunter, and then she's sent backstage. The first 2 minutes of this match, it was like a completely different Mick Foley than you had seen in all of 1999. Like, he had gotten himself in relatively good shape.
He was off
good
of house
cardio
shows.
Condition.
He got off of house shows for a good 6 weeks just to get in shape for this.
Some of the highlights of this, and there were a lot in this match. Hunter hits Foley with a ring bell early on and then grabs a chair, hits Foley in the head in the ring, and they bring up the Rock Mankind match from last year's Rumble that we have reviewed, which featured all those sick chair shots, which were like 13 in that match.
The one detailed in Beyond the Mat, which was just about coming out around this time. Or had it already come out?
I don't think it had quite come out at this point, but right around that time, you're right. I really, in this match, enjoyed the contrast between Ross and Lawler, with Lawler playing not overt heel, but subtle heel, and Jim Ross being the babyface. I just found it was just, I enjoyed having two guys who were on contrasting sides of the participants in this match.
Yeah.
And you really don't get that with anybody, maybe to a small
you
degree
get it,
with Stryker, but it sucks.
Well, you still get it between Lawler and Cole these days, but they're just switched roles.
I find it's just backwards now
roles.
That it just doesn't have the same effect almost.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, Hunter gets backdropped in the entranceway onto this wooden pallet, and it would end up cutting up the back of his
calf.
And just real, real nasty spot
right
there.
A huge cut, and just realizing that this guy wrestled the match that he did with this huge gash on his leg.
What would you say? That spot took place like
early.
First 10 minutes?
Oh, not even.
And he went 20 more. This match was almost a half
minutes.
Hour.
Yep.
So he wrestled a ton on this terrible calf that we would see a operation on later. Foley then brings in the barbed wire baseball bat.
To a huge, huge reaction.
Yeah. I thought it was, they pulled it out and the fans just popped for this thing. And Hunter grabs it, hits Foley with it repeatedly. Hunter's calf just looks fucked at this point. Foley then attacks the Spanish announce team to give back his bat.
No, what had happened was Hunter attacked Foley with the bat, and then Hebner grabbed it away from Hunter.
Yeah, and took it out of the match.
And at this point, the crowd started to boo that the bat was disappearing. Hebner, for some reason, gives it to the Spanish announce team. And then Foley would regain advantage, and then Foley went back to the Spanish announce team to grab the bat. What had happened, though, in between all this was that they actually did a switch. They did a switch between a gimmick bat and a real bat. I believe when Mick grabbed the bat back from the Spanish announce team, that was the gimmick bat, because that's what he had used to hit Triple H over the head with. So they did a little switch there.
Interesting. The next spot was really well done, I thought, because Hunter took out Earl Hebner, and then Foley has the barbed wire bat, and they build up, and Foley finally hits Hunter, and the crowd goes nuts for this. And it was like, you got the pop where he brought the bat out, and then you made everyone want to see Hunter get hit with this thing. Hunter took the bat, he hit Foley with it, and then they built up to this one big spot where Foley didn't have to hit him 85 times with this bat. He hit him once, it got a huge pop. And you contrast that to the tables match, where you did all these chair shots to a fraction of the reaction from number one to number eight.
Yeah.
This was just one big spot. It was a relatively safe bat shot. I mean, the bat was gimmicked.
Yes.
And I just thought that's how you do professional wrestling.
I agree.
You minimize the risk and you maximize the pop.
Absolutely. That's the importance of weapons. I don't think weapons should
be taken for granted.
This crowd
went nuts for this. Yeah. This one shot on Hunter, because they teased it and then they made the fans really want to see this.
They teased it for weeks. You saw Foley walk out there with that bat, and it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't just like bringing a chair in and hitting the guy for no reason.
Hunter then did juice at this point, which I thought added to the match quite a lot.
Yeah.
Hunter countered a pile driver spot on the announce table and back body drops Foley onto the announce table. Then there's this crazy hip toss to Foley on the floor where he lands onto the steps with the back of his knee,
which we've seen Foley do a lot of times. But
that's
still
why he walks around like he does in 2011, where he's...
It looks insane, especially today.
Yeah, and you see how hard it is for him to get around, and this is the answer why. Hunter then grabs handcuffs, so they're going to play off of last year's show. Foley fights off Hunter, but his hands are cuffed at this point. Then they're fighting in the entranceway. Foley takes a chair shot to the head, and then Hunter teases another one, but then The Rock runs out and hits the chair to the head of Hunter. And I think this was somewhat to be symbolic of Rock, being the guy who just murdered Mankind a year ago, and here he is coming to his help.
Yeah.
And takes out Hunter with a chair shot to the head.
Yeah.
And then the officials unlock Foley from the handcuffs.
I really enjoyed the stuff with the handcuffs. It was a nice throwback to the match last year, which you never see them do. You never see them refer to anything from a whole year back. So the fact that they were doing this, I really enjoyed. There were a lot of creative spots with Foley attacking Triple H using only everything except his arms. And The Rock coming in, I thought, was a really nice touch, too, to play on the relationship between The Rock and Foley in the whole year leading up to that.
The WWF, as you said, they seldom do that, where you try and tell these stories just with moves and stuff like that. Like, it's such a huge part.
That's the whole point of wrestling. You're supposed to be telling stories
exactly.
In the ring.
And, you watch All Japan or New Japan or Noah, they constantly do this, where fans will react to an unknown.
Can he hit this finisher on this guy?
Yeah, or if you introduce a new guy who does a significant move in Japanese wrestling history, fans react to that because they remember history. And in WWF, you seldom get that, where people will pop for, things like that.
Simple
sequence that we
like
saw with Rock, Hunter, and Mankind on this this match. Then we got they're back into the ring, and Foley goes to the outside and he brings thumbtacks into the ring, and this leads to Stephanie coming back down, and we see
there is a pile driver on an announce table too. Then, but
no, I missed that.
That's
we get a
forget that.
We're back into the ring, and Foley ends up taking a back body drop onto the tacks.
Yeah, I thought Stephanie coming out. Before you get to the finish, I thought Stephanie coming out was a nice touch as well, because here you have this heel bitch who's coming out of legitimate concern for her husband, and it almost makes you draw some sympathy for this heel character, but in this case it works well because it makes you feel like it's real, that this woman is almost breaking kayfabe to come out because she's worried about her husband.
I didn't give it much thought other than it being Stephanie.
All right.
So after Foley takes the back body drop onto the tacks, he takes a pedigree, kicks out to another thunderous pop, because no one kicked out of the pedigree at this point. And then Hunter hits a second pedigree onto the tacks and gets the win.
Insane. Like, he didn't even let Foley's arms out so that he can block his face.
This
was just like a full sit
down. That was an incredibly
dangerous
move. Like, when you're talking about tacks and your face.
And your eyes.
Sorry, I'm not interested.
Well,
very brutal finish, and Hunter is then taken out on a stretcher, and Foley chases him to the back, wheels the stretcher back out, and attacks him with the barbed wire baseball bat in the ring. Maybe a little overkill at the end.
I think it would have been much more effective to have Foley walk out with nobility, and he would have gotten
that
standing
ovation.
Do this
on Raw or something. And
I don't think he needed that, but that definitely doesn't take away from the match at all. This was a legendary match.
This was an awesome match. Yeah. It totally holds up in hindsight. I thought this match was every bit as intense as the tables match, but I thought it was done
better.
It was booked much more smart.
Yes.
That's why I enjoyed this more.
There was definitely a lot of psychology employed in this match that you didn't see in a lot of the other spot fests that were around at this time.
And this was the match that made Hunter.
Absolutely.
He was a top guy after this match.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think this is the kind of opponent or situation that The Miz really needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got like a glimpse of that, I thought, in the Last Man Stand or False Count Anywhere match with Morrison. Mm-hmm. But for Miz to have a huge match like this with a credible opponent, problem is you don't really have that kind of Mick Foley style character.
True.
For Miz to work with. But this is the kind of thing I think Miz could really use to get to that next level.
Their whole roster, all those guys are on the cusp of something like this, and they all could use a great match like this one to help their careers.
Told a great story, and it would lead to another pay-per-view match the following month. So just a fantastic match. I can't recommend this one enough.
Yeah, it certainly proved for Mick Foley that he could still deliver a great match, which is, if you read his book, it was his whole concern leading up to his actual retirement. It was whether or not he could still have that one match within him. He had to convince Vince of it. He had to convince the wrestling fan base of it, and he certainly did with this and the match in the next month.
I just thought this period was maybe Foley's finest because he was in a position where I think mentally he was expecting to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have a guy who was less selfish than Mick Foley, who this entire program was designed to get Hunter over as a top guy.
Mm-hmm.
There was no shortcuts for Foley where he was going to get his pop in the end or that he'd have anything coming out of it. It was all designed to get Hunter over, and there's so few guys in the industry like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel guys like Mick Foley are just, they're so rare and so valuable to trying to create top guys, because you ask a ton of main eventers who, if they're being honest, would not have been this giving in a program as Foley was. So that,
and he benefited from this too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this was for those who had watched him in 1999. A lot they applauded him because he had pretty much given his body to this business and was shot at the end of 99. And people were just had, I think, very moderate expectations for this going in, thinking, you know, we've seen what this guy can do. He's very limited, and then he came out with a performance like this. It was amazing.
Awesome, awesome match. Yes.
They go back to WWF New York with Jonathan Coachman, who interviews Linda McMahon. And just asks her about the McMahon-Helmsley era. And Linda says nothing.
No.
This was the stupidest cutaway I've ever seen.
Same dry delivery we've always seen from Linda McMahon.
That could have been your senator, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And now it's time for the Royal Rumble, Way. It was, they announced it every 90 seconds a new entrant would enter.
Oh, is that what it was?
Every 90 seconds, they stated. And then they just randomly show a highlight of Shawn Michaels winning the 95 Rumble where he drew number one.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Why did they do that?
Actually? I have no clue, because number one was D'Lo Brown. So I don't know if they were trying to establish D'Lo might win this.
They wanted to get over the fact that you had to have both feet touching the floor. They really emphasized that, and that's why they show that finish from the Michaels Bulldog match. But I don't know if it ever came to play, really.
It's kind of odd. Sean was far removed from programming at
and
this
Bulldog
point.
And Bulldog was actually in this Rumble match.
Yeah, that's true.
But to, quite to no role. Effect.
Yep. So we'll just go into this. I'll kind of go in order of the and just any spots sure. that kind of jumped out during it. We started off with D'Lo Brown and Grandmaster Sexay, Brian Christopher.
And they cut the Lawler's reaction, complaining about Grandmaster Sexay's luck. And Ross says, some would say Grandmaster Sexay had bad luck from birth.
And D'Lo early on goes for a running powerbomb that Christopher awkwardly reverses into a Hurricane Rana.
Oh, really?
And this was just weird, because it was like 3 months after the draws incident.
Was it 3 months after?
Yeah. Yeah, it was late 99. Wow. And I'm just surprised not only that D'Lo would use that move, but that this was just very awkward to watch.
Oh, I didn't realize it came after that.
The Rock's dreaded opponent, Headbanger Mosh, was in third. And then we got the first of many Kai and Tai run-ins way that...
Yeah.
I've got to say, were my highlight just because of picturing you watching these. Mm. Because it led to Jerry Lawler's racist gimmick throughout the entire Rumble, where he referred to them as Chinese.
Yes.
And Ross would continually state that they are Japanese. And they explained that these two are not in the match, and they would run in and just get thrown out.
Yeah.
Christian's in fourth, then Rikishi. Rikishi tosses out Mosh and Christian, and then Rikishi hits... the Rikishi driver on D'Lo, which was shortly banned afterwards because it was an incredibly dangerous move.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that dangerous, to be honest. Like, it's not.
It was if
it's safer than a tombstone pile driver. I think.
If the head is tucked in between the legs,
but his legs are huge.
Yeah, so I don't know. They felt it was a very dangerous move.
It was a great looking move, and yeah, they banned all pile drivers at that point.
Yeah.
Except for the tombstone. But a huge, huge pop for Rikishi. And it's just,
who had only been in the company a few months. Like, yeah. He wasn't even in there very long.
Yep. And it's just, I think I'm so far removed from this point that it's almost hard for me to remember that Rikishi was ever this over. I mean, this guy was he headlined that Armageddon match like a year later.
And I'm pretty sure at this point in time, like, he had just debuted, like, a month prior.
With Too Cool.
And they had been spelling his name R-A.
Rikishi. Yeah.
And that's how Ross referred to him all matches.
Rikishi. Yeah.
And it eventually just became Rikishi. R-I. We are nerds. Scotty Tuhati was sixth, and this led to Brian Christopher, Scotty Tuhati, and Rikishi in the ring. So they stopped, posed, the lights went out, and they did their dance together. And it ended with Rikishi clotheslining both and eliminating them. And then as Rikishi's standing in the ring, the cameraman zoomed into his ass as the countdown occurred.
I really enjoyed this little comedy segment. I think every good show needs a little bit of comedy. And what better way to do it than with this dance from Too Cool. And then Rikishi still kept his serious side by eliminating him afterwards. So
Steve good. Blackman was out next and quickly thrown out by Rikishi. Then Viscera came out, and he got a surprising reaction on this. It was like the crowd gasped at this Viscera.
Well, because now you get the story of the big fish taking on the even bigger fish. Now you got to see Rikishi. Who's going to eliminate Rikishi? Who can stop this huge man? Well, here's an even bigger man.
They trade power spots, and then Rikishi eventually got the advantage and dumped Viscera over the top rope. Then Boss Man comes out ninth, and he just stalls and eats out the clock and never gets in with Rikishi. Test is out. This is a little depressing. We had two guys in a row who have passed away here.
And then Bulldog was...
Oh, right. Jesus. Is Bulldog after?
I think so.
Change my notes here. No. Test attacks the Boss Man to get and sends him in. And you're right. Bulldog is in 11th, wearing his jeans and black boot combo with socks.
I did some thinking about this, about why he would do this. Why he would wear jeans for his entire run.
I'm sure he was told.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking like, you know, he obviously couldn't go with the same Union Jack shorts in this era.
You had to update him.
Yeah, you had a guy like Big Boss Man, which is a perfect example that updated his look for the Attitude Era. But I guess Bulldog wanted to do that as well, but I don't know if jeans and no
jeans
shirts.
Equal attitude.
Jeans and no shirt.
And a lot of anabolics. Gangrel comes in next, and Kayentai returns, and they're instantly dumped out. Test and Bossman toss out Taka Michinoku, who flips over the top and lands face first on the mat.
And they over.
Lawler dies laughing that this man legitimately has broken, like, his cheekbone.
Yeah.
And this was actually the last time Taka ever appeared in the WWE.
Is that right?
He never came back.
Wow.
Lawler just thought this was great and constantly called for replays. And we get Edge out 13th, and Lawler then just asks to see, quote, that poor Chinese guy, Taka Michinoku, and Ross corrects him and says he is Japanese as they show the replay.
I thought it was funny. I wasn't offended in the least.
We got a surprise entrant to number 14, that being Bob Backlund. And he gets a huge pop here.
From the New York crowd.
Yep. And everyone works together, and they eliminate Rikishi. Just seemed like a waste that you had the group elimination. I thought someone big would eliminate
Rikishi. That's true. I guess they just felt like Rikishi had enough, enough of the rub for this match.
Chris Jericho's in 15th. He drop kicks and eliminates Backlund. Then Crash Holly's in, followed by China. China, oh, fuck. She vertical suplexes Jericho to the floor.
That was not a believable-looking suplex at all, but they wanted to
tell that Jericho. Story. He was such a comedy heel here. And then Bossman knocks China off the apron, and she's eliminated. So, great. Farouk is out number 18, and the Mean Street Posse run out. They attack Farouk in the ring, and then Bossman throws Farouk over the top rope. And this kind of was teasing an alliance between the Bossman and the Mean Street Posse.
Oh, is that what that was?
Well, yeah, because the Bossman works the streets.
Oh.
Then we get the Road Dog, Al Snow, Val Venus. Funaki runs back in and is tossed out, and Ross says that Taka has been taken to the hospital. And Lawler asks, what do you have against the Chinese? And Ross just shakes his head. I think this is Vince having more fun on the commentary. Prince Albert is in, and Val Venus then eliminates Edge with a back body drop. Road Dog, if you notice here, he was laying in a corner, just hugging the bottom rope without anybody there. It's weird. It was like he was having a seizure. Then Hardcore Holly's out. The Rock is number 24, gets the biggest pop on the show. He eliminates the Boss Man. Then Billy Gunn's in. Big Show's in number 26. Big Show eliminates Test and Gangrel. Then Bradshaw comes in. The Mean Street Posse returns. And Bradshaw's attacked. And this leads to the New Age Outlaws eliminating Bradshaw. And Farouk is out to fight with the Posse. So we're getting a Mean Street Posse Acolytes feud way.
Mm-hmm.
Man, something to salivate over. Kane comes out with the former Tory. Remember her? She's the original Tory.
She's still Tory.
Well,
isn't that a real name?
I don't know.
I don't know either. The former Tory.
The former Godfather's then out number 29. And Funaki runs out again and is dumped out as Lawler continues his Chinese jokes. Fuck. And number 30 is X-Pac. And Road Dogg leans over and Billy Gunn eliminates his own partner. Kane then eliminates Gunn. And it's down to The Rock, Kane, Big Show, and X-Pac. Rock hurls X-Pac over the top rope, but the referee misses it. And X-Pac climbs right back in and continues on. I didn't know what the point of that was. Kane is then eliminated by a spinning heel kick from X-Pac. Picture that. And Big Show then press slams and eliminates X-Pac. We're down to Big Show and The Rock. Show puts Rock on his shoulders, goes for a running power slam. I don't know what he was going to do when he hit the ropes if Rock didn't reverse this. And Rock counters. Show goes over. And we have a camera angle facing the ring from the other side, and we don't see Rock's feet touch the ground, which they in fact did.
Okay. So then the showing the Michaels Bulldog finish did make sense.
It did, but I was always of the impression that Rock kind of fucked up the spot where he was not supposed to touch the ground. He did, and they made an angle out of it.
I thought from the angle that I saw in the home video, I didn't see their feet at all.
They did eventually show a camera angle on TV, and it set up a rematch with Rock and Big Show for the next pay-per-view. So The Rock is declared your winner. He grabs the mic and says, finally, The Rock is going to WrestleMania. And then Big Show attacks The Rock after leaving and throws Rock over the top rope. And this was, of course, to set up I don't know what, because I guess he claimed that he eliminated The Rock. And this leads to another home video interview with Tom Pritchard and The Rock. And then we see Triple H in the trainer's room,
mm-hmm.
and he's getting stitched up on his calf.
Oh, this was excellent. This was so good that we got a glimpse of these guys' real pain backstage following.
For showing this, he's
getting
stitched up. He then asks for water, and he asks him to tell his parents he's okay.
Yeah.
And
I really like
then
this.
You get him stitched up. This really put an exclamation on the match.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was really good.
I think they should do this after everyone. They
after
do
every
reaction.
Stitching. Yeah.
Like a reaction.
Royal Rumble reaction.
Yeah.
For those curious, the longest member in the Royal Rumble was Test, 26 minutes and 17 seconds. Farouk was the shortest with 18 seconds of ring time. Okay. So between two matches, Farouk was in there for all of 2 minutes and 53 seconds, folks. Yeah. Long night of work for Farouk. So that was the Royal Rumble, everybody. I'm going to give this show an 8 out of 10.
Yes.
The same ranking Way gave Legendary. I thought the swimsuit competition dragged this event down from what was a very, very good show. Mm-hmm. Awesome WWF title match. Not one of the better Royal Rumbles, I thought. It was just an average Rumble.
Yeah.
But this was really highlighted by that world title match.
I agree. I thought that... I exactly with that rating, 8 out of 10. Anytime you have two very memorable matches on a card, I think it's always a good thing. And so we got the Hardys match and the wonderful Cactus Triple H match. So please watch this if you have not. But many of you have, and we're going to get to that feedback right now.
All right, so let's dive into that right now. We'll start off with Mark Robinson. Royal Rumble 2000 was actually the first WWF pay-per-view I got to see live on television. I was 2 months away from my 13th birthday at the time and was the first wrestling pay-per-view I'd seen in about a year. It was shown for free here in the UK on the terrestrial TV station Channel 4. I enjoyed the show. Taz made a good debut against Kurt Angle. The Hardys and Dudleys put on a good tables match with many sick spots and a great finish. The IC title was decent, mostly thanks to Chris Jericho. The swimsuit contest speaks for itself. But Terry Runnels' thong on her swimsuit was so far up her ass, I wonder if it's still stuck up there. I thought the street fight was the best I've ever seen Triple H perform in a match. The pedigree finish into the tax was one of the sickest spots I've seen Foley do. The Royal Rumble match itself was good. The finish looked botched to me as Rock's feet actually hit the floor when Big Show went over the ropes, but they used it as an angle for their match at No Way Out that year.
Stephen Smith, the most significant memory I have of that year's Rumble was Too Cool and Rikishi dancing together during the Rumble match itself. Cheesy? Sure. Unrealistic? Of course. But you guys always mention how important the crowd is to most wrestling angles, and the crowd helped put a smile on my face every week when Too Cool were around. Not many guys today get the same pop as that mid-card comedy trio did back then, so I look back on Too Cool with fond memories before the Rikishi running over Stone Cold angle killed their popularity. I couldn't agree with that more.
Well, they
had a really good thing going until that.
Well, the company was just so over at that time that the mid-carders, everybody was just perceived as these stars. Like, it was just such a hot product at this time.
Sure.
Shane Poole, watching Royal Rumble back in 2000, it was the first time a WWE pay-per-view was shown on free TV here in the UK on Channel 4. A lot of English or British.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I think listeners. A lot of people from the UK download our show and they automatically get our podcast.
It was a great card. The street fight was outstanding. However, Channel 4's treatment of it was crap. They put ad breaks into it, so you missed all the backstage segments.
Oh, really? That's too bad.
Wow.
You weren't really missing much, though.
You got to cut down some stuff, so.
Andy Gordon, after watching the 2000 Rumble and seeing the shit that was the Miss Royal Rumble pageant, I've decided never to watch this show again. The WWF title match was okay if you wanted to see Mick take more shots to the head if you are a fan of that stuff. The Scott Putski Award goes to the Bulldog or maybe The Rock. Could you guys please review some MMA?
I don't know, guys. Can we review some MMA?
Yeah, you let us know.
Jay Hunter. This was back when WWF did an excellent job booking fresh, exceptional talents like Rock, Triple H, and Foley, and Taz's wrestling career still had hope. Thanks to the surprisingly great undercard, they left almost nobody for the Rumble match itself, and what a fine collection of mid-card jobbers it was. Boss Boob? I don't get it.
I don't get that nickname.
Test, Hollies, Show, Venus, Albert, Headbanger, Mosh, Blackman, the list just keeps going. Well, at least the WWF wasn't as hard up for names like in the 97 Rumble, where a third of which were unknown Mexicans like Latin Lover and Cibernetico. I don't find them to be... I actually enjoyed the fact they had the AAA talent exchange at that point.
I don't think I saw that one.
You had Hector Garza in that.
Yeah.
It's good. I know MSG is the world's most famous arena, but it only holds 20,000 and looks like crap on TV. I disagree.
I disagree with that, too, because the crowds are usually so good at MSG.
It's got such a unique look to it. It looks different than any other arena they run.
And the roof is iconic in the MSG arena.
I disagree on that, Jay.
And because they do have that, I could see what Jay's saying, though. It's not. It doesn't look like a grand place like maybe, you know, the Sky Dome would, but I think if... For me, it works.
Go back to WrestleMania 18. That set looked like shit.
The set looked like shit, but the crowd, the distance and the hugeness of the arena was great.
I can't stand the stubby entrance ramp and how it directly faces the hard camera. There's always some asshole moving wires in the background that distracts me. It was great to see the MSG crowd mark out for Too Cool and Rikishi's awesomely contrived impromptu dance routine. It says a lot when everyone's over with your hardcore wrestling fans. A month prior to Armageddon 99, Miss Kitty bared her breasts and caused Sky Sports to drop 4 pay-per-views a year. Channel 4 picked them up, so this pay-per-view was the first pay-per-view to air on free TV in the UK and Ireland. That sounds great, but C4 sucked. Poor reception, they took ad breaks during interviews and matches, then on a 50-minute delay, meaning pay-per-views would finish at about 5 a.m. When Sky reacquired these pay-per-views, they now cost £15 each. So seeing those trailer trash titties caused us Europeans to have to pay twice for WWF pay-per-views. Boo.
Oh.
Hope you enjoyed the useless history lesson. Keep up the great work, fellas.
Yeah, now I know everything. Trailer trash titties. Mark Sherman. Royal Rumble 2000. This is when the WWF was becoming... too cool, pardon the pun. Everybody was all of a sudden a wrestling fan at this point. I was pumped to see Taz in the WWE, although I knew deep down this acquisition was the beginning of the end for ECW. Overall, this pay-per-view was pretty darn good. The big Jeff Hardy bump drew a huge pop from me on my sofa. The only thing that was missing was Stone Cold Steve Austin. I can remember saying to myself that this is one of the few pay-per-view matches without Rock or Stone Cold in the picture. Yes. Okay. Mick and Triple H gave it all they got. I loved Cactus's WWF debut on Raw MSG, and this lived up to that match. The one thing that still stands out in the Rumble match for me, except for the fact Rock won it, who else, was when Rikishi and Too Cool had the lights turned down in red and broke it down. Everybody has fond memories of the Rikishi spot. I request Royal Rumble 92 if you haven't done it already, in honor of the new Bobby Heenan DVD that just came out. Keep up the good work.
Mark Cardoso. Royal Rumble 2000, the first DVD I ever bought. The one true thing I remembered about the New York crowd that night. It was during the Rumble match when the Big Boss Man's music hit, the whole building let out a huge groan. Ever since that moment, whenever I hear that song played on old tapes, I wait for the crowd to groan like that New York crowd.
Okay, well thank you guys for your feedback to the Royal Rumble. Now we're going to move on to some feedback from our previous week's reviews. Let's start with Starrcade. 99 that we reviewed.
What a gem.
Yeah. And which was just a month before.
Yes, you're right.
This Royal Rumble.
What a contrast of products.
And Brian Lindbergh, he says, just finished the Starrcade review, and I had two thoughts I wanted to share. First, in regards to the ref trying to stop Dustin Rhodes in the bunkhouse brawl, this was something that was a recurring theme of WCW at the time.
Right.
And my number one pet peeve in wrestling, the refs not remembering the match stips. Now, I know that when every single match has several stips, it can be tricky to keep straight, but week after week, Nick Patrick was giving guys a 10 count and no DQ / false count anywhere matches. There were also several matches that were submission matches where the refs would go down and count near falls or that ended in a pinfall. Terrible. Secondly, on the whole ladder match spot thing, in a match with a cage or ladder, the spot where a wrestler that has the opportunity to win just by escaping and turns back to deal more punishment is acceptable by logic if and only if there has been the buildup of the feud where one or both wrestlers have stated that winning isn't their main goal, destroying their opponent is. There have been some matches where one wrestler makes the claim that he is going to destroy them and end their career, and then goes for the first opportunity for victory. How is that destruction if it's the same match you would have had with Jobber X ending with one finishing move at 8 minutes? Think back to Cactus spinning on the belt. I thought it was a very effective promo. Sometimes just winning the match isn't enough.
Richard Lee. Hey guys, first great job on hosting on Boxing Day. Starrcade 99, wow, was that a piece of crap. Now we should send the podcast over to Dixie Carter as yet another warning. But as Russo and Bischoff are still there, I consider this moot. Now for legendary. Love the Photoshop on the site for this week, and way you look great as a blonde. But for John, you eerily look so much like, you look too much like Cena. Now, does this mean down the line you guys have to look at Knucklehead? If not, maybe some of the other stuff Cena has done as a mini movie festival. Anyway, gotta go and keep the putskis going.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you for that. Let's just move on here to your thoughts on Raw this week, and then we'll save the rest of the feedback for next week. Jay Hunter again. Jay says, "Did anyone ever hear of the word acrostic before? Me neither. Anyway, I'd agree that the Nexus theme tune has been played the most this year, besides maybe Cena's, and you might get sick of it quicker because most of the WWE's music is from generic American rock bands, but it is incredibly fitting. The lyrics are about being united and fighting each other. There's even marching sounds. 12 Stones actually wrote it as a tribute to the U.S. Army. I agree that the lyrics are fitting. I just think the sound of the song is not fitting. The tone of it.
I'm not a fan of it at all.
Here you have a renegade group, and for some reason they're using a teenager angst-ridden theme music.
I'm sure 12 Stones are proud that their army theme is being used for Nexus.
Guys, I just don't think the sound of the song is right for this group.
Dennis Amaya, excellent podcast as of late, you guys. But John, how can you confuse your Disney characters in movies? It's Mufasa and Scar. Anyway, it sounds like Wei got John an awesome gift. Where did you get it, Wei? I can't seem to find any books on Lucha Libre in any stores. Can't wait for you to review the Rumble 2000, which, if I'm not mistaken, was a great event.
I found it in a bookstore in New York, in St. Mark's.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, so you can go there, Dennis. Oh, Jeff Johnson. There was a heavyweight title match to kick off Raw a decade ago when Y2J won the title from Triple H. The second segment was Triple H bullying the ref to say it never happened. It will be stricken from the record.
So it never happened.
So it never happened. So Michael Cole was right.
Christopher Francis. For the hell of it, a comparison of the heights and weights of The Miz, Chris Jericho, Tyson Kidd, and Chris Benoit.
Okay.
The Miz is 6 feet 1, 231 pounds. Jericho, 6 feet, 226. Tyson Kidd, 5'9", 199. Chris Benoit, 6 feet, 234.
All kayfabe weights and heights, of course.
So, thanks.
But okay. Anthony Scatz. I find it fascinating how WWE has started a feud that appeals to the IWC far more effectively than Vince Russo, who's hell-bent on booking towards us, ever has. Maybe he should learn that you should book for the wrestlers and let us analyze instead of booking for us and having the wrestlers try to analyze on TV to the interest of nobody. I don't like Punk leading Nexus like Wei does. They were formed because they were anti-establishment and anyone the company supported. But now Punk leading them kind of throws that out and makes them feel below a one-on-one feud.
I disagree. They're so far removed from that
original
introduction. They are a WWE act. They have a locker room. They are employees of the WWE. What? They have theme music.
No, but what do they represent now? What is it?
They're just a group.
Just a group.
That wants to beat up John Cena. They don't really stand for anything.
Yeah.
They're not really working towards anything other than eliminating John Cena. And finally, our last one here is from Felix Russo. I really like the Nexus theme music. I think it doesn't suit them because it's more like babyface music than heel music. But I still think it's a great song. I can understand why people would resent it because it's been overplayed on Raw, similarly to why people don't like Nickelback. Mm. I'm a rocker, though. I wouldn't be caught dead at a Spice Girls, New Kids on the Block, or Backstreet Boys concert, and I know John Pollock loves them. And maybe he doesn't like Arcade Fire, Sam Roberts, or Metallica, but to each their own. We are all united in our love for pro wrestling and our hatred of TNA.
No.
I do like Arcade Fire. I'm not a big Metallica fan. That's true. And I'm fine.
Good music is good music. Bad music is bad music. Let's forget genres. But I would not equate the Arcade Fire or even Metallica with Nickelback at all.
All right. So that brings us to an end of Review Away, everybody. And coming up next week, Wei... Mm-hmm. We've got 7 days, so what would you like to watch in that time?
Ooh, well, I know that you'll be in Jamaica, John. And
what should I watch on my vacation?
Yeah, well, while you're on vacation, I decided I would love to take a vacation too. And I would love to review a movie also released in the WWE this year. And that is, of course, Knucklehead. starring The Big Show.
All right,
Paul White.
It's taken us a few months, but we are going to dive in and review Knucklehead, everybody. We feel it's only fair, after we reviewed Legendary, to also look at The Big Show's on-screen talents.
Which one sucked more?
That'll be the ultimate question, folks. And feel free, if any of you have seen both movies, which I doubt you have, feel free to leave feedback on our wall at reviewaway.com. And we're enjoying getting all of your suggestions for potential interviews. So when I get back from vacation, we're going to try and line some of those up. And we're getting some great suggestions from people. So in the meantime, we will be back next Sunday with Review Away. There is no Review of Raw or Impact this week because I'm gone, but we'll be back next Sunday. And then it's back to normal here on the show. Also, I want to mention that we will be doing our Royal Rumble pool, similar to what we did last year.
Oh, very nice.
We are working it out of developing a different system for it this year, where you might not even have to email in your suggestions. We might have.
So how do people do it?
You can do it online.
Oh, okay, like a clicking thing.
Yes.
Oh,
so we'll have more information on that on next week's show.
Our programmers are hard at work.
Yes, they're busy developing programs.
Wow.
So we will have an update on that next week of how you can join the Royal Rumble pool, which was a lot of fun to do last year. And then next week, Knucklehead, and it's the worst of 2010 on the law. Mm-hmm. So get all your picks together in all the major categories as we take a dump on the year 2010.
Oh yes, and Knucklehead.
Music. Let's go out with
Nickelback.
No, we'll go out with I don't want to hear Nickelback. Let's go out with some Arcade Fire for our pal. Oh, who was it?
Felix Rousseau.
Here you go, some Arcade Fire to finish us off.